I will, sis. No matter how long it takes, no matter what it costs, as long as I'm alive, you're not going to die. She stared at the small metal nameplate on the door's end cap. Susan Lane. That's all it said. There was a barcode next to her name, all Sis's vital information in computer-readable form. Not much to show for a human lifetime, even if it was only 17 years. Her wristwatch buzzed annoyingly. Brushing at the tears in her eyes, she saw that the watch was telling her she had 1 hour to get cleaned up and dressed and down to Humphrey's place. With Amanda.
End of Side 5.
Mandy wore virginal white, a sleeveless mandarin collar dress with a mid-thigh skirt that clung lovingly to her curves. She'd done her hair up in the latest piled-high fashion, some stylist's idea of neoclassical. Poncho had put on her best pantsuit, pearl gray with electric blue trim, almost the same shade of blue as Ellie. Next to Amanda, though, she felt like a walking corpse. She'd phoned Humphrey several times to tell him she was bringing Amanda, and gotten the answering machine each time. It wasn't until she'd been on her way to the catacombs that Humphreys had returned her calls, angrily demanding to know who this Amanda Cunningham was and why Poncho wanted to bring her to their meeting. It was tough holding a reasonable conversation into the wrist phone, but Poncho finally got across the information that Amanda was going to be her co-pilot on the mission, and she thought he might be interested in recruiting her to help Poncho's espionage work. In the wrist phone's tiny screen, it was almost impossible to judge the expression on Humphrey's face, but his tone was clear enough. "All right," he said grudgingly. "Bring her along if you think she might be able to help us. No sweat." Poncho smiled sweetly and thanked him and clicked the phone off. "No sweat, huh?" she thought, laughing inwardly. "He'll change his mind once he gets a look at Mandy. He'll sweat plenty." Poncho spent the time on the electric stairways to Selene's lowest level, telling Mandy everything she knew about Humphreys. Everything except the fact that he'd hired her to spy on Dan Randolph. "He's actually a billionaire?" Amanda's big blue eyes went wider than ever when Poncho described Humphrey's underground palace. "Humphrey's biotech," Poncho replied. "The Humphrey's Trust, Lord knows what else. You can look him up in the financial net."
"And you're dating him?"
Frowning slightly at her incredulousness, Poncho replied, "I told you it's strictly business. He's trying to hire me away from Astro."
"Really?"
That suspicious, supercilious tone dripped from the one word. Poncho grinned at her. "More or less." Once they stepped through the airlock-type door and into Humphrey's underground garden, Amanda gasped with awe. "It's heavenly!"
"Pretty neat," Poncho agreed.
Humphrey's was standing at the open door to the house, waiting for them, eyeing Amanda as they came up the walk. "Martin Humphrey's," Poncho said, as close to a formal introduction as she knew, "I would like you to meet Ms. Amanda Cunningham," Humphrey's said, all smiles. "I looked up your dossier when I got Poncho's message you were joining us this evening." Poncho nodded, impressed. Humphreys can tap into Astro's personnel files. He must have Dan's offices honeycombed with snoops. Humphreys took Amanda's extended hand and bent over it, his lips barely touching her satiny white skin. Amanda looked as if she wanted to faint. "Come in, ladies," Humphreys said, tucking Amanda's arm under his own. "Come in and welcome." To Poncho's surprise, Humphreys didn't come on to Amanda, not obviously at least. A human butler served aperitifs in the library cum bar, and Humphreys showed off his collection of first editions. "Pretty rare, some of them," he boasted mildly. "I keep them here because of the climate control system. Back home in Connecticut, it would cost a considerable sum to keep the old family home at a constant temperature and humidity. Here in Selene, it comes automatically." "Or we breathe vacuum," Poncho commented. Amanda gave her a knowing look. The butler showed them into the dining room, where the women sat on either side of Humphreys. A pair of squat, flat-topped robots trundled back and forth from the kitchen, carrying plates and glasses. Poncho watched intently as the robots' padded claws gripped the chinaware and crystal. They didn't drop a thing, although while clearing the salad plate, One of them missed Pancho's dish by a fraction of a millimeter and almost knocked it off the table. Before anyone could react, though, it recovered, grasped the plate firmly, and tucked it into its recessed storage section.
That's a pretty good optical recognition system they've got, Pancho said.
I don't believe it's optical, Amanda countered.
To Humphrey, she asked, is it?
Very sharp, Amanda, he said, impressed.
Very sharp. The dishes have monomolecular beacons sprayed on their bottoms. The robot sensed the microwave signals.
Pancho lifted up her water tumbler and squinted at its bottom.
The chip's too small to see with the naked eye, Humphrey said.
What powers them?
The heat from the food or drink. They have trouble with ice drinks. And your salad. Pancho thought it over for half a second.
Dishes pick up residual heat when we handle them, huh?
That's right. Pancho smiled as the other robot placed a steaming plate of frog's legs before her.
Don't want Humphreys to think Mandy's the only smart one here, she told herself.
All through dinner, Humphreys was charming, solicitous, all smiles. He paid almost as much attention to Pancho as he did to Amanda, up to the point where he encouraged Mandy to tell them about her early life. She began to talk, hesitantly at first, about growing up in London, winning a scholarship to the International Space University.
It wasn't easy, Amanda said with almost childlike candor. All the men seemed to think I was better suited to be a photographer's model than an astronaut.
Humphreys made a sympathetic murmur. Pancho nodded, understanding all over again that Mandy's good looks had been as much of a problem for her as an advantage.
But I made it, she finished happily, and here we all are.
Good for you, said Humphreys, patting her hand. I think you've done wonderfully well. As dessert was being served, fresh fruit from the botanical garden outside with soy milk ice cream, Amanda asked where the lavatory was. Once she had left the room, Pancho leaned closer to Humphreys and asked in a lower voice,
Well, what do you think?
He frowned with annoyance. About what?
About Mandy.
She almost added lunkhead, but stopped herself just in time.
She's wonderful, Humphreys said, beaming. Beautiful, but brainy, too. You don't see that very often.
Pancho thought, Women don't let you see their brains very often. Not if they can get by on their looks. Aloud, she asked,
So, do you think she'd be any good cozying up to Dan Randolph?
No,
he snapped.
No?
Pancho was astonished.
Why not?
I don't want her anywhere near Randolph. He'll seduce her in a hot second.
Pancho stared at the man. I thought that was the whole idea, she said to herself. Get Mandy into Randolph's bed, I thought that's what he'd want.
She's much too fine a woman to be used that way, Humphreys added.
Oh, for crying out loud, Pancho realized. He's fallen for her. This guy who picks up women like paperclips and dumps them when he feels like it, he doesn't just have the hots for Mandy. He's fallen in love with her, just like that.
Cellini Governing Council.
Dan couldn't help contrasting in his mind this meeting of Cellini's Governing Council with the meeting of the GEC's executive board he'd attended a few weeks earlier in London. The meeting took place in Cellini's theater, with the council sitting at students' desks, arranged up on the stage in a semicircle. Just about every seat on the main floor and the balconies was taken, although the box seats on either side of the stage were all empty. Maybe they've been roped off for some reason, Dan thought. Must be 2,000 people out there, he thought as he peeked out at the audience through the curtains screening the stage's wings. Just about every voting citizen in Cellini showed up for this meeting. As he stood in the wing of the stage, the council members filed past him, taking their seats. For the most part, they looked young, vigorous. 6 women, 5 men, none with white hair. A couple of premature baldies among the men. They must be engineers, Dan thought. He knew that membership on the council was a part-time task assigned by lottery. No one was allowed to duck their public service, although they could take time off their regular jobs to attend to their extra duties. Nervous? Dan turned at the sound of Doug Stavanger's voice. Smiling, he answered, When you've had to sit through as many board meetings as I have, you don't get nervous. You just want to get it the hell over with.